Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 17th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Do I sound sick in the head?
You do, but that's nothing normal.
Nothing out of the normal, right?
Yeah. I'd be worried if you didn't. So
thank you.
But you did have a wonderful trip for the listeners that are Facebook friends with you and all that kind of stuff. I do have to ask a question, though.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to embarrass myself completely by asking this. But
and that's nothing new either.
Exactly, right? So Jeannie won an award or something like that, right?
Sort of.
Okay, all right. And it sounded like it was Cusumano.
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, so is that something that she came up with, or is that what is Cusumano?
Okay, so in the bonsai community, bonsai literally means tree in a tray or tree in a pot. It's a literal translation. That's the Japanese word for it. The Chinese word for it is penjing. And so when you have a bonsai tree, generally when you show it to people at a house or at a show or something, you have an accompanying plant or figurine or something that complements the tree, and there's a lot of rules to it. And so when you do that, when you use that element with flowers and plants and you complement the tree with it, it's called a hitakusa. Oh. But when that plant is so beautiful and so complete and you use it just by itself, it stands alone on itself, it doesn't need to complement anything else, it's called a kusumono.
Ah, kusumono, okay.
And so kusumono is starting to get its own, not following, but its own, you know, props. And so this woman, her name is Young Choi, and she studied in Japan, and she is in charge of the U.S. Seed Bank, which is a major, major responsibility.
I have an account there, yeah.
So she asked if there was someone in Florida that could represent Florida, because in this one rare instance, the person who runs this U.S. Bonsai National Exhibition gave this woman five full banquet tables to try to display kusumono to give more awareness to it. And so she decided to break up the country in regions, and she asked if there was our friends, if there was someone down in the South that could represent Florida or the Southeast and put together some pieces. So they obviously picked Jeannie, because that's why we're talking about this. Jeannie put together 10 pieces. They displayed five at the kusumono, and then they displayed the other five throughout the building. And at the end of it, the woman who ran it liked one of Jeannie's pieces so much that she also is in charge of, like, kusumono at the U.S. Arboretum in Washington, D.C. And they asked her if it was okay if they kept one of the pieces and took it. And so, of course, my wife was like, of course. So they took it, and now it's on display in Washington, D.C., next to a beloved tree there that is from a bonsai artist here in Florida who had just recently died within the last month and a half. So it's a big, big honor, a big, big deal. So it's not an award. It's just a massive honor. And she was like the bee's knees at this thing. I'm dating myself.
Well, congratulations. Whatever level of honor it was, obviously. Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
But the reason I asked is there was a Sopranos character called Jeannie Cusumano.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. And in fact, there's an entire episode called Dreaming of Jeannie Cusumano.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know whether she created that thing, and she was a huge Sopranos fan and thought it was kind of clever to be named.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, no.
It's not true. So
I only watched the first two seasons of Sopranos. I can only take two seasons of it. But I'm interested in that movie that's coming out. That looks pretty wild.
Yeah, the funny thing is most Sopranos fans think it's going to be crap, so.
It looks pretty good.
So we'll let you watch it first and let us know.
All right.
All right. So remember when this used to be a poker podcast?
Yes.
But the first item really isn't about poker either. But all right. So obviously it was the first week of NFL season for every team except for the Packers. And what I thought was really interesting, obviously, is that the Packers game, and game is in huge air quotes right here. But, you know, I did like watch Monday night and watched college football and some of the recap shows. And we really now have seen how widespread sports betting is, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
It's now available in half of the U.S. states, which is phenomenal to even think about that. Just crazy because, you know, you just have to go to Nevada if you wanted to, right?
Right.
Overseas. But so now we've really seen it and how in our face it's going to be, because before, I mean, if you wanted to see, like, betting lines on an NFL show, you had to watch one of those pay-for-play shows that was on, like, at 3 a.m., right?
Right.
With that Matthew McConaughey guy that picks the games, right? And now it's on all day long, and it looks really to me actually kind of a little jarring. I mean, I'm obviously certainly not against sports betting and all that's fantastic, but it really has taken over the televised sporting world now, right?
Yeah.
And so as I watched that, I was like, is this really going to help the future of online poker, which is what we've been saying for the longest time, right? Is that, you know, any expansion of gambling is going to help eventually get us online poker. So if it's sports betting first, that's fine. And then hopefully they'll hold the door open so poker can squeak through, right? But I'm just wondering now, since it's that in your face, and I say in your face to everybody that's like on watching TV, that people are going to go, whoa, it's really easy to gamble now, right? And is that going to be a bad thing? Is it going to be like, hey, okay, well, you saw what happened when we allowed sports betting, and now it's all over TV. We can't allow poker now because it's going to be all over TV too, even though poker's been on TV way more than sports betting.
Right.
Am I barking up the wrong tree here?
No, I don't think so, because I seem to remember, you know, fantasy football being all over the TV when they did that too. When that first launched, it was just everywhere in your face. And that was still betting, and it was made clear that it was betting. It wasn't like, oh, we're having fun with fantasy and getting around with guys in the basement and drinking beer and joking around. No, it was clear that these guys were betting on games and showing them winning millions of dollars and big checks and all that. And that was ubiquitous. I mean, every time you turn on television, it was FanDuel and all those other things. And so I don't think this is going to have any different effect. I think until we get enough people pulling for us, doing it, and get enough money in Washington to say, hey, you know what, here's enough lobbying to throw enough money at the right people to get it passed, I don't think it's ever going to change our fate either way. I think it's going to be the exact same reaction as it was when it was FanDuel and all that crap. So, I don't know. I mean, it was a lot on TV. I wasn't even watching football, and I was seeing ads. So, yeah, I think it's going to be the exact same thing that happened to us, which is nothing.
I mean, I guess the other argument is that it makes gambling more mainstream, right? Or more just part of our everyday lives. And therefore, if someone says, hey, now we want to allow online poker, well, okay, why not?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I can't watch TV without seeing the spread on the Packers game, in air quotes again. So why does it matter whether we have poker? So I guess that's the other argument as well, too. But it was just interesting. I mean, I wasn't really prepared for how it looked, even though I've been reading articles all week leading up saying, hey, this is what you're going to see this weekend. When I actually saw it, it was just, like, super jarring. So, of course, we have to wait till October here in Florida before we can lose our kids' inheritance on the over in the Packers game.
On the kickoff. So let me ask you this. I think we need like an update on exactly who is still lobbying for our side and where and when and what's actually in the making. Because I mean, we haven't heard anything about online poker or any kind of bills moving through or anything in ages. And never mind a national, you know, regulation or something.
Yeah, so interesting you mentioned that, because now it's just reminding me that there was an article that I saw over the past couple of weeks since we took last week off, about somebody, a really wealthy guy who wanted to put his money into poker lobbying, and I realize it's not on our show notes now, so I must have missed it in my casting of net. So I want to look for that for next week's show and get an update. But yeah, but you're right. There is, as far as I know, no organized lobbying effort right now. So whoever this is, and how much money he has is better than nothing, right?
So, remember the PPA? That was that was on the show like every other week when that for a while, and now it's like we can't remember, barely remember the initials when I said it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I wouldn't have. I was going to call it poker or something else. So we'll see. Yeah, all right. So a little teaser to next week. Now, of course, I had to come through with that. But
yeah, you better then better take your ginkgo biloba. Don't forget that too.
All right, the World Series of Poker has announced that based on updated guidance from Nevada's governor, that participants this year may remove their mask while seated at the poker table, but must wear them at all other times. All right, so I like to think that I'm an intelligent person and that you and the listeners probably would give me credit for being an intelligent person, right? I also have no trouble admitting that there's more that I don't know than I do know, and I would imagine you and the listeners would agree that, right? So help me understand why you can remove your mask at the table, but you have to wear it everywhere else.
Okay, so
wouldn't it be the exact opposite?
Speaking of as someone who wore his mask everywhere he went in everywhere I went across this whole country, I literally drove from Florida to New York, stopped in North Carolina, stopped in West Virginia, did all these things. I never took my mask off, washed my hands with all of this appropriate soaps and all the appropriate antiseptic whatever, and I still caught something. So to me, this is ridiculous. I would never want to take my mask off. Now I know that most people are saying that the mask is to protect the people who aren't wearing the masks because it comes out of you a lot easier than or whatever. But I still think it stops stuff from going through the mask into me too. But to me, I think their thinking is once you sit at that table, you're seated with people who are supposed to be vaccinated, so you're okay. Whereas when you're going around, you might get infected or you might infect people who aren't. I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out here.
So let's recap if somebody missed. I don't know how anybody could have missed this, but from 2 weeks ago when we mentioned in order to play this year, you have to be vaccinated. You can't even like be tested negative if you're not vaccinated. You have to be vaccinated.
Right.
Now, again, staff is not included in this, which is another whole weirdness, particularly because when you read Nevada governor's the rule number 50 or whatever it's called, which is all the rules on how conventions can happen based on the number of people and the vaccination status and all that, right? It never mentions employees in there. It only mentions participants. So I mean, we've been talking for weeks now that the reason the World Series didn't include staff was because they're not going to be able to staff it as it is, let alone if they require the staff to be vaccinated, right? But it does go even farther on that. I don't know if it's a staffing problem for all conventions in Nevada based on the guidance. So that's interesting. So really the only people that should be infecting you at the World Series should be staff, and that includes the dealer who's sitting at the table.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter to me. I guess that's what I'm trying to understand. I don't understand why you would think that you are at risk of getting COVID walking around, going to the restroom, anything else. But when you're at the table, you are apparently in some kind of like bubble that protects you from the guy in the middle of the table who may not be vaccinated.
Well, the question remains then is, are they going with the, I don't know if it's antiquated or not, but the original suggested guidelines was saying, you know, you can't gather in rooms with less than 10 people or something, with more than 10 people or whatever. So at a table, it's like 10 people, right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is like the place that you're going to be closest to people.
Right, right.
And most likely to sneeze all over them, right?
Yeah.
Is at the table.
I know.
I mean, that's what I'm trying to understand. I'm like, I can understand if they said, hey, if you need a break from your mask, just get up from the table and you can take it off. And when you're at the table and you're in close proximity to people, you need to leave it on. Now, of course, and we have listeners who don't, you know, believe any of this, and that's fine too, but who think this whole thing is silly. And that's a whole different argument. But those people are right when they like pick apart this stuff. I mean, this has been my problem with COVID from the beginning is that the rules don't make sense, or they're inconsistent. I should say, not don't make sense. They're inconsistent.
Yeah.
this seems like a complete inconsistency. I mean, what science out there says that you are safe from COVID sitting at a poker table, but you're at risk of it from walking to the bathroom?
I
don't get it. I don't get it. But hey, you know, we're still a couple of weeks away here, so who knows? Maybe something else will come up. Maybe you have to wear a unicorn horn. Who knows what's going to come up with now the next couple of weeks. But
yeah, it makes no sense.
When I saw this, and I was just I'm still like my jaw is on the ground just trying to understand this.
Yeah,
but,
I agree. Yeah.
All right, Poker Legend Doyle Brunson has tweeted that filming has begun on a documentary about his vastly interesting life. And the only other detail he shared is that it is coming from the same folks who brought us the fascinating Michael Jordan series, The Last Dance, which I still haven't seen yet.
But are you serious? You didn't see that?
I know. I need to get that on my list. I need to, you know, when I'm traveling. Here's the thing is, usually when I'm watching series is when I'm traveling, which I haven't been a lot of, right?
Right.
And then this last trip, I'm way behind on Schitt's Creek too. Everybody, I'm like, you know,
oh my god, I love that show.
People are going to quit listening to the show because I'm so out of it with this stuff. So I need to get through Schitt's Creek first, and then I'll do The Last Dance because you know it's The Last Dance, so I can't. It's not the first dance. So.
Not to go off on a tangent, but did you know that for all of the television commercials for the show, when they say Schitt's Creek, the logo has to be on the screen.
No, really?
Yeah, it has to be on the screen so they can understand that it's spelled S-C-H-I-T-T, because if you just turn on a commercial and say, hey, Schitt's Creek, they're like, what? My kids are hearing this. You know, of course, we're doing it now without the logo, so.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But we're adults, and we'll find out later. Scott's going to be adult again later in the show. I can't wait for it. The Last Dance was phenomenal, so I'm glad that people with that talent, level of talent for storytelling and quality are in charge of something like as important as Doyle Brunson's documentary. So that's fantastic. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you talk about, aside from maybe Stu Unger, which is more tragic, right. Interesting.
Right.
I don't know of a more interesting poker player out there there's enough that you could do 10 episodes just on poker, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And still not even scratch the fact that he was a basketball star and track star and all this other stuff, right? It's going to be really, really interesting, I think, and definitely going to look forward to seeing that when it comes out. So,
10 episodes. Maybe we should have the American Horror Story people
that's it. Yeah,
those do a version. That'd be fantastic.
And finally, comedian, Saturday Night Live legend, and former high-stakes poker host Norm Macdonald has died at age 61 after a private 9-year battle with cancer. And I will admit this one, this was one of those that made me sad.
Yeah.
I've been a big Norm fan. Though I had this one situation, and for whatever reason, I believe I've said this on the show, and I have no idea why. Maybe it was back when he was hosting High Stakes Poker and we're talking about him. But the one time I saw him do stand-up was here in Tampa, and it was a 3.5-hour show.
Wow.
We were held comedy hostage. Because, you know, you can't, like, walk out on a comedy show because
they
pack 97 people around the table for two, right?
So you're
tripping all over everybody. I thought he was probably drunk or high during that show, but Laura's not so convinced, but he was repeating jokes and it was not his best performance, but I got to see it. But the rest of the time when I'm watching on TV, I just thought he was hilarious. So,
I was driving home when I heard the news. Jeannie was on her Facebook feed while I was driving and, she said, and I was like, wait, say that again. I mean, it's always so, I went through the same sort of emotion when I found out Neil Peart had died from Rush because I didn't know he was battling cancer.
Right.
You know, and I'm not one of those super fans that dives into every, you know, whatever to try to find any nook and cranny about the band. I just loved them. So the same thing with Norm Macdonald. I had no idea. And he was 9 years. So he was in his 50s when he got it. And that's shocking. You know, we had seen him over the last 9 years. You didn't even know.
He's been playing the World Series.
Yeah.
All of those too. So. Yeah.
So sad.
Yeah.
He was so funny in his own way, too. There was no one like him, you know, his comedy. No one like his comedy. He was pretty awesome. And that's a shame. It really is. I was shocked when I was driving. I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I think it was David Letterman that said there are lots of people as funny as Norm Macdonald, but no one funnier.
Right. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. All right, here's this week's updates on poker room reopenings. New York, Tioga Downs Casino Resort has reopened its poker room. That gets us to 269 reopened poker rooms in the United States. And be sure to go to antiupmagazine.com/reopen to see them all.
All right, cool. Any updates? Papes, the Antiup Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money Site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antiup Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call to four questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup PokerCast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup Fans group on Facebook. We get to complete an O'Malley's move today. Love doing that. So here comes part one, and we'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a 50-cent, $1 no-limit hold'em home game. The level of this game is pretty solid, with most opponents knowing what to do. The game is six-handed, and the night is winding down. It's hour five of a six-hour game. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, and the MP makes a raise to $3. This opponent is a mostly balanced player. He plays logical ranges for the game that he is playing in. He bought in for 100, got it up to 200, but is currently on a downswing and sits with $91. He's typically pretty even-tempered, but he lost his profit on two particularly rough hands, a cooler and a suckout. The cutoff calls, and we're on the button with $100 on our second buy-in. We're down 100. We look down at the king of diamonds, jack of spades. I think this is either a raise or fold situation, but I'm a little gun-shy after losing in a boat-over-boat situation earlier in the night. We call. The small blind folds, the big blind calls, and we go to a flop. The pot is 1350, and it comes down the king of hearts, jack of clubs, seven of spades. The big blind checks, and the MP bets $8. The cutoff folds. This flop couldn't be any more beautiful than it is. If our opponent had something like aces, queens, ace-king, king-queen, or ace-queen, we are in really good shape. I think I want him to hang himself. We call. The big blind folds, and with 29.50 in the pot, we see the nine of spades come on the turn. The MP checks. Other than queen 10, which could be in his range, I don't think this card should scare us too much. I'm going to make a fairly large bet to make it look like I'm trying to steal this pot. We bet $20. Our opponent thinks for about 30 seconds before saying those dreaded words. Raise. I'm all in. So, it's $80 more to win a $130 pot. If we call and lose, we're down 191 on the night. What's the move?
Well, I want to believe we are ahead here, but the check raises a big red flag. The check bet is expected. I don't know that I meant.
You wrote that out too early.
But when he slows down on the turn, so we bet and then shoves, why? It's a fairly reckless bluff strategy, in my opinion. So if he has something, what does he have that makes sense? The queen 10 is possible, six-handed, so are sets, all of them. I know most of us will make a hero call here, but I think I need to be convinced more.
I'm rarely folding top two unless the board is really wet and a story that beats me makes sense. This is a kind of a wet board, but if he had a straight, why would he force this out? If he had a set, maybe that's why he'd want to force this out, but we weren't really playing it like a draw, so this could be a draw, actually. So I'm going to call. I'm going to see what happens here. So here comes part two.
Hello again. I didn't feel great about this situation, and I tanked for almost a full 2 minutes. I just think top two is too strong to fold here. After all, what am I playing king-jack preflop for? I can't ask for much more than top two. We call. Once or twice, we ask. I always go once, he says, and tables the king of spades, 10 of spades. All right, no queen, no spade. We see a glorious deuce of diamonds on the river, and we scoop the pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, if you're going to play trap hands, you better have nerves of steel. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, I did say a bluff isn't a very strong strategy here, right?
Yeah.
It proved out because O'Malley has bigger balls than I do.
There you go. There it is right there. Scott's a big, wearing his big boy pants today, talking about big balls. Gotta love that on the show. You know, this is the guy who made him say Deutsche Bank for 15 years, and now he can say big balls on the show. I love it.
Hey, I watch Wipeout all the time, and that does not mean what you mean. So, I mean.
Oh, so he owns these big rubber red balls in his backyard? Is that what you're saying?
Hey, it's Utah. I don't judge.
Well, anyway, that's a good call there. But the guy did have a draw. I don't think it was a bluff. I think it was a semi. Summit. He had a pair, so he had a made hand, and he had a bunch of draws, really, straight and flush. So, tough call, but it was a good one. So he's lucky he faded that river. So good job.
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations, a podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And our longtime friend Michael Paul is the Hand of the Week this week, Chris, and next week he sent us 2-in-1 email. So
cool.
We will have fun for 2 weeks talking about how much he loves crappy beer.
No, if I don't die from whatever I contracted on this trip home.
All right, he's playing 2-3 no limit hold'em at a local card room. He says the max drop is $7 per hand. He says the game is weird. Sometimes a $13 preflop raise will take the pot down, and other times a $30 preflop raise will get 30 callers. Played with most of the people before, but I really don't have any history with any of them. Buy-in is 100 to 400. Wow, kind of surprising that buy-in is 100. Well, it's 2-3, I guess.
2-3,
But that extra dollar on that small blind usually makes the game play a little bit bigger. So, but all right. He says, we played about an hour and after a bit, about an hour and a bit after buying him for $300. We've been super passive and haven't really played many pots yet. We're sitting with about 250-ish. Or as we used to like to say on Annie Up, squiggly 250.
Yeah.
And the eventual hand, eventual villain has us covered with about 500. We're on the button, 3 limpers call, and we have the ace of hearts, 10 of hearts, the Cazenza.
Yes. Okay, so how many limpers?
3.
I think I just limp. I don't know if this is a strong enough hand to, you know, it's one thing if you're playing, you know, in a little tournament at Gambit's house and your folds around to you and there's passive guys to your left and you want to go crazy with it. But it's another to have a bunch of people interested in this hand and it's a bigger game. And I don't know. I think I might just call here.
Yeah, I think this is again about the push-pull thing I always like to talk about. At this point, with there's so many limpers in here, this is a pull kind of pot now. I'm hoping for my straight or flush here. I'm not playing for a 10 or an ace.
Right, right.
So at that point, I think I'm going to try to pull some folks in by just calling here. If it was different, if there's like maybe one limper, then I would feel the strategy is probably better to raise and take control of the hand. But I'm going to try to get in here for $3 and flop big and stack someone. That is in my plan. So
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
All right, Michael has a different plan. He raises to $16. The blinds fold and 2 of the limpers call. Says the villain is in early position. Pot has $55 at the drop is pulled, and we're 3-handed to the flop, and we have 236 remaining. The flop comes, the ace of clubs, 8 of spades, 9 of spades, and it checks to us.
Well, I mean, we narrowed the field, so it's hard to imagine a better aces out there unless somebody is coming along with a suited ace-8 or ace-9. So I think this is a good flop for us. It's not, there's no hearts, so that kind of sucks. We have backdoor straight draws. What kind of straight would it be, though? That would suck. So I think we got a bet, 55 in the pot. It's kind of a wet board. I mean, 8-9 is there, 2 spades are there. So I think we got a bet to protect. I mean, I'm even close to betting pot here, you know, like 40, 45, 50 or so.
Yeah, the hand changed when we decided to raise. So now that we raised, we tried to take control. We did drive out most of the players. And now we got an ace on the flop. I mean, there's really no reason not to bet here. And, I think because of how dangerous it could be, I'm betting on the higher side. So,
yeah.
Would not be opposed to, like you said, a pot size, 55 or 50 or...
Yeah.
45, somewhere in that neighborhood. Okay, our hero bets 40, so probably a little less than I would, but still a substantial bet. The villain calls, and then the other player folds. So we're heads up now, 135 in the pot, 196 behind, and the turn is the tray of diamonds, so the board now is ace of clubs, eight of spades, nine of spades, tray of diamonds, and our opponent checks to us.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a good street to bet. Nothing's changed as far as the board being wet. Since it was merely a call, he could have something like Jack 10. You know, he could have something and he's walking the dog, but I doubt it because most times when people bet the flop, you know, after raising pre-flop, they tend to slow down on the turn if they miss. So if this guy had a hand like a set or something, I think he'd want value for, he wouldn't want to check and let us get away with another check behind. So I think he'd want to bet here. So I feel like we might still be ahead. And I feel like since the board is still the same wet board that it was, the three didn't hurt anything, so I still want to protect against it. So, I don't know, I'd bet half the pot, whatever that would be. How much is in the pot again?
135.
Yeah, like 65, 70?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know why I'm letting myself be lulled into this. This is a draw. He's on a draw, but it certainly seems like it, right? The way he's playing it, he limps. Check called, checks again. So, you know, I want to make him pay to catch up to me. So yeah, easily half the pot here. So I'm thinking 75 ish.
Okay.
All right. Our hero bets 70. He says just about half the pot. He says, I don't like to play large pots with just a pair. So I was trying to keep the pot manageable. Plus I only had a 10 kicker and figured somebody out of position could play ace jack or ace queen this way, though I would have expected them to lead out or re-raise the flop. The ever-popular slow play, a set or two pairs, is always an option. Maybe I could or should have bet a little more. The pot has 274 now, and we are 126 left. I guess you could bet more. I mean, if our object is that we believe the villain's on a draw, I mean, the more we bet, the bigger the mistake he makes in calling, right? So, but yeah, I mean, you always have those other hands out there that could beat us, and you know.
Yeah, I don't like a shove here. I know some people might be screaming that, you know, shove because you want to protect your hand. There's enough money in the pot to put the rest of it in, but I feel like a decent bet will get you the same information. Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, if you shove, you're betting way more in the pot. I mean, it was 135. You had 196. So you know, that seems too much for me with a single pair. So I think we're all right now. I guess we'll see what happens. All right, the river is an offsuit seven.
Oh, so he just called, right? The guy just called?
Oh, I'm sorry. It didn't say. I'm going to guess. Yep. Okay. Let's just assume that. Yeah. Okay. I'm making sure he didn't say that. Yep. Well, obviously he didn't raise or we would have already had more discussion here. So.
All right,
so river's the offsuit seven. So final board is ace club, eight of spades, nine of spades, tray of diamonds, random seven. And now our opponent bets, and he says it's enough to put me all in.
Yeah, this is the tough one because we talked about Jack 10.
Yeah, right.
You know, and how would you play Jack 10 from the beginning here? Would you limp with it? Yeah. Would you call a minor raise with other limpers? Yeah. So then when the flop comes, would you check call something for 40 with Jack 10? So yeah. And then when the turn comes, we bet 70. Yeah, you might still call there. That's why I was saying that people might be saying shove there because you know the guy's drawn. You don't want to give him a chance to draw for 70. So I know it's overbetting the pot, but when people shove, they always overbet the pot. So this is tough. I don't know. I don't like to go broke with one pair, you know, and a horrible kicker on a really wet board. So I probably fold.
The only way I see his winning here is if he was on a flush draw. Because a flush draw here would do this too, right? Because no chance to win other than putting us all in and hoping that spook us, right? So any other holding that he would make this move with has his beat, I think. Yeah. You know, he's got a better ace. He's got two pair. He's got a set. He's got the Jack 10. So we really have to be fairly confident that he's you know, bluffing on a busted flush draw here, and I don't think I can be that confident. So, I mean, I guess it's 126 to win 400. So, I mean, I guess maybe the math requires us to call here, but I really feel like we're dead.
Yeah, it's a tough call to make, especially because I mean, two pair could be out there. Two pair could have gotten there. Who knows? You know, I mean, could have been A7. Then he hit A7, you know, suited A7. He hit it, and he's just kind of like thinking that we're missing in betting, and he's just calling along. Now that he's hit two pair, he shoved. You know, aces up. But the other thing, though, is if he has the straight, why shove? Why not value bet? So that's the one thing that would make me sit there and then make a hero call is why. And again, it's like, oh, he's overbetting. Well, he's not really overbetting. You know, it's not unreasonable to bet whatever he has to put us to a test to make us think that way. But it seems like it could be a bluff.
Yeah, and I wonder what his actual bet was. I mean, it said that he bet and it's enough to put us all in. So, right. I mean, did he bet $126 exactly? Or did he say, I'm all in? Because right. If you say all in, that's more of a bluff tell, I think, than
putting out 150.
Exactly. Or calculating the exact amount that you need to put them in. Or if you say, hey, I'll put you all in, what are those stupid phrases, right? Yeah. I mean, that's more bluffable than being more specific. So that might have helped my decision as well, too.
If he said, I'll tap you, Teddy, I'm folding. Other than that, I think I'm going to go with my initial gut and fold, but it feels like it could be a bluff. But I'm going to go with my initial gut reaction here and fold.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a tough way to go broke if we call and we're behind, or not behind, dead, obviously, because it's the river. But yeah, the 4-1 has got me thinking. And again, I wish I had a little bit more information on how he bet that river. Maybe I could be persuaded to think that he's just trying to steal his pot. So there's just so many hands that have his beat here, though. So many hands.
Right.
All right, here it says no flushes got there, but the Jack 10 gets there as well as any gut shots. I figure 10-6 isn't likely, and even 5-6 isn't likely unless it was of spades. I was still considering maybe you were slow playing a set or a flop two pair. I could see maybe ace jack or ace queen, even ace king playing passive this way out of position, but I just don't know him well enough to know if he'd be doing this or not. Since I had to call my remaining 126 to win the $400 pot, I figured it's the right price, and I call. He turns over ace seven offsuit and scoops the pot.
Holy shit. Holy shit. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a nice little lucky river card there, right?
Wow. Yeah. That's one of the things I said right away, but I didn't really believe it. Wow. That's tough. That's tough to take because you had him the whole way and he's just calling with a horrible pair of aces. Not that our aces are great, but it's at least a Broadway pair. You know what I mean? It's a Broadway hand, but
and wow. Suited.
Yeah. And suited. Wow. That's terrible. This is why, you know, the shove on the turn, I know it seems like it's big, but, you know, it's not just the draws that you're trying to get out. You're trying to get these hands that backdoor into two pair that beat you. You know, you lay the hammer down on the turn, but that blows.
Yeah, but again, I would rather have this guy in this hand all the way, you know, with A7. I'm like, you know, and I think we made the right bet sizes everywhere. I mean, yeah, in hindsight, we bet more, maybe he goes away, but I don't know. I think we bet properly throughout it. So here says the obvious question is what could or should I have done differently? I know the obvious answer is a bigger bet on the turn. I realize that I still ended up putting all my money in the pot, but if I bet bigger on the turn, I'm effectively committing myself. So if he calls, it's going in. It's all going in anyway. If he called 70 on the turn, how much more is a realistic bet with my remaining stack, knowing the pot at the time before I bet the 70 was only $135? Should I have just shoved? I know we aren't supposed to be afraid of the monsters under the bed. We also aren't supposed to go broke with one pair in our hand, and it seems like we were effed either way.
Yeah.
I know being results-oriented, a bigger bet on turn probably would have taken it down, but is it really the right play? Did I just get unlucky? I looked up the odds on the flop, and I'm 79.5%. So again, I mean, that's why – and then he says on the turn, I'm 93% to win. So again, I'm like, you know, he made the wrong decisions all the way to the end, just got lucky. So, you know, I'm not gonna beat myself up over that. I don't think.
No, I mean, you know, some of the wisdom that was passed down to us in the beginning years of our show and stuff like that, people would say, if someone is drawing or has a lesser hand, you know, I mean, if you felt like someone was drawing, they should never see the river. Now, I don't know what that means, but it means that you need to bet enough that they can't draw, or that at least it's going to be a mistake to draw. Now, in this case, the guy had A7. He wasn't drawing, but the fear that we had was that he was drawing.
Now, he was essentially drawing against us. I mean,
yeah, I mean, you know, but a draw. We think of a draw.
Straight, but I mean, right. he needed that 7 to win, so it's essentially the same thing.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. I mean, I'm not quick enough at math here to figure out whether he really made a bad call there or not. But, you know, half-size bet, pot bet. I mean, and there's no guarantee here this guy goes away if we bet more. I mean, maybe if we shove, he does. But, you know, it's not that much more money. I mean, this guy obviously felt way more confident with his hand than I would have felt confident with his hand, or you would have, or our hero here would have, right? So yeah. Who's to say that he's going to go away with that? So,
yeah, that's a brutal river right there. Three outer.
And I would say that's one of the things that I try to do is not try to think about the path that it did not go down, because you don't know, you know, in this particular case, we don't know what he would have done had we shot. So,
yeah.
I mean, he might have still called and you still would have lost. So it doesn't change anything. Right. So, I mean, any time spent worrying about it is wasted, I think. So.
Well, hopefully your fortunes turn around with next week's Hand of the Week, Mike. We appreciate you sending it in. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.